everyone, and welcome to Queen's Law Pro Bono Radio. I'm your host, Bobby Alvarez, and I'm a third-year student at Queen's Faculty of Law. Queen's Pro Bono Radio discusses interesting and off-center legal topics that aim to make legal discussions more accessible to you, the general public. We strive to stimulate interest and provide information while always being entertaining. This week's show is focused upon what happens when a class action fails to be certified. At the center of this topic is the recently decided 2023 case, Carcillo and Canadian Hockey League. In this case, the Ontario Superior Court refused to allow a group of former hockey players to bring a class action that alleged widespread abuse suffered at the hands of older teammates, coaching staff, and other individuals involved in the top junior hockey leagues in the country. This issue begs the question, if not through class action, how will these plaintiffs and other players like them seek compensation for similar abuse that many of them allege to have suffered? This podcast will discuss how courts have the power to convert proposed class action lawsuits into mass tort lawsuits, where plaintiffs bring separate claims under one or more non-class actions. We will discuss the benefits that these actions can bring to individual claimants, as well as the potential issues that claimants can face as a result of these changes. Ultimately, the question that Carcillo seeks to answer is, can mass torts provide individual claimants with adequate access to justice? But before we dive into the details of the case, it is important to first clarify some key concepts that will be discussed in this podcast. A class action lawsuit is a type of legal proceeding in which a group of individuals with similar claims against a common defendant come together to seek compensation. Class actions are commonly used in Ontario to resolve claims more efficiently and cost-effectively than if each plaintiff were to file a separate lawsuit. In a class action, there is usually a representative plaintiff who pursues the claim on behalf of all class members. This plaintiff is responsible for managing the case for the entire group. To bring a class action lawsuit in Ontario, the representative plaintiff must first ask the court to certify the class. The court must be satisfied that the case can proceed efficiently and effectively as a class action, rather than as several separate lawsuits from individuals who would be part of the proposed class. When considering whether to certify a class, the court evaluates several factors, including whether there's a valid cause of action against the defendant, whether the claims of the class members raise common issues, and whether a class proceeding is the preferable method for the resolution of the common issues. The court's decision on whether a class proceeding will be the preferred method for a lawsuit to be heard will depend upon a number of different factors. One of the most important considerations will be to ensure that the individuals bringing the claim have adequate access to justice. Now, access to justice is a term that can mean a number of different things in the context of class action proceedings specifically, it relates to the ability for claimants to seek compensation from harms that they have suffered. The Supreme Court of Canada has found that there are two important dimensions to access to justice in class action proceedings specifically. The first focuses upon the process and is concerned with whether plaintiffs have access to a fair process to resolve their claim. This relates to the court or tribunal where the claim is being brought and the fairness of the process within that court or tribunal. The other is focused upon substance, which is concerned with providing claimants with a just and effective remedy for their claims if their claims can be established in court. The decision we are going to speak about today, Carcillo and Canadian Hockey League, provides further insight into the role of access to justice in the context of class action lawsuits. The court in this case is particularly concerned with the first dimension of access to justice, which, as we just discussed, is focused upon providing plaintiffs with a fair process to resolve their claim. So now that we've learned a bit about class action lawsuits and some of the basics, let's discuss the particular lawsuit that was brought by the plaintiffs in Carcillo. So Carcillo and Canadian Hockey League is a case about three former junior hockey players who filed a class action against a total of 60 amateur hockey teams and the leagues to which they belong. The representative plaintiffs had played for five of the 60 teams which were sued and brought the claim on behalf of all former and current players who had suffered abuse while playing in Canada's top junior hockey leagues from the year 1975 to the time that the claim was brought in 2023. Now, that is nearly 50 years of junior hockey league seasons, which comprised of thousands of potential plaintiffs. The abuse that the plaintiffs claimed to have suffered included physical and sexual assault, harassment, hazing, bullying, forced consumption of drugs and alcohol, and the use of homophobic, sexualized, and racist slurs directed against minors who were playing in the league. Each plaintiff provided the court with detailed accounts of the abuse they personally endured, as well as statements from other players describing similar experiences. The judge was appalled by the conduct, calling it horrific, despicable, and unquestionably criminal. Now, it's important at this point to note that for the purposes of a certification motion, the evidence provided by the players has not been fully challenged by the various defendants in the case. So, even though they testified to abuse that they have suffered, they will remain as mere allegations until the evidence is actually tested and evaluated at trial. The plaintiffs, defendants, and court all agreed that some players had suffered harm that could be compensated through a civil lawsuit. However, the parties disagreed as to whether that compensation should be pursued through a class action lawsuit or through individual lawsuits. The plaintiffs argued that the lawsuit should proceed as a class action. They believed that a class action was the only feasible way that they could have access to justice. In making this argument, they stated that the greatest barrier to access to justice was a culture of silence among the hockey leagues about the abuse that happened. The plaintiffs argued that the abuse, as well as having to bear the abuse in silence, were normalized elements of the league's culture. The players who provided statements to the court described feelings of immense pressure to keep their stories to themselves, which many did for decades. According to the plaintiffs, a class action lawsuit was the way that they could overcome the culture of silence. They argued a class action would prove the anonymity and security in numbers and would allow more players to come forward with their claims. The defendant hockey teams and leagues, on the other hand, argued that the court should refuse to certify the class. While the defendants admitted that some former players likely suffered harm that could be compensated through a lawsuit, they argued that a class action was not the preferable way for those players to pursue their claims. And in doing so, the defendants relied on a principle in class action lawsuits where there must be a representative plaintiff who has a claim against each defendant. Since the representative plaintiffs were members of only five of the defendant teams, the remaining 55 teams asked for the action to be dismissed against them. And after hearing both of these arguments, the court was tasked with determining whether access to justice could be better achieved through a class action or through individual lawsuits. The judge found that the proposed class action, as it was based on a collective liability of the teams and leagues, did not provide a fair, efficient, or manageable procedure that was preferable to any alternative method of resolving the claim. In coming to this decision, the court held that if the proposed class action was allowed to go ahead, it would be near impossible to manage. Firstly, the case would require 78 different defenses, which would be an unusual amount of parties defending the same claim. Aside from the sheer amount of parties defending the claim, the case would likely lead to hundreds of third-party claims. Now, a third-party claim happens when a defendant alleges that the harm the plaintiff is suing for is actually the fault of someone who's not already within the lawsuit and therefore brings them into the lawsuit. The judge in Carcillo believed that the individual members of each of the 60 teams who perpetrated or condoned the abuse, as well as hundreds of other people, would have to be added into the action if it is proceeded as one big class action. The complexity and scale of these proceedings would make the class action impractical. While the court determined that a class action was not appropriate for this case, they found that actions brought by each individual would also not be appropriate. Instead, the court provided a solution based on their powers to change proceedings under the Class Proceedings Act. Under Section 7 of this act, when a court refuses to certify a class action, they can allow the action to continue as one or more proceedings between different parties. In this case, the court transitioned the proposed class action into 60 separate actions. Under this new process, each new action would include a group of co-plaintiffs who would all sue the specific team where they suffered abuse, as well as the specific team's league and the Canadian Hockey League. The court called these proceedings opt-in joinder actions, which are also known as mass tort actions, as individuals can opt in to join claims with other individuals who suffered similar abuse on the same team. These actions are distinct from class action lawsuits, where those affected by the events in the lawsuit are presumed to be included and usually must opt out of the class. To illustrate how the court's new alternative proceedings work, let's look at an example. For example, all players who alleged that they suffered abuse while playing for the Sarnia Sting between the year of 1975 and the year of 2023 would join the representative plaintiff Carcillo under one action. And any player who alleges that they suffered abuse while playing with the Lethbridge Hurricanes in the same time period would join the other representative plaintiff, Taylor, in a separate action. The rationale for this ruling provided by the court was that joinder of cases based on similar experiences among the claimants is a more appropriate and feasible means to achieve access to justice. In concluding that this was the appropriate process for the hockey players to bring their claim, the court referenced other cases where the court found that these mass tort actions were the most preferable type of action. Now, let's look at a couple of those cases to see what the courts had to say. The first case that the court discussed was Hudspeth and Whatcott. In this case, two gay men brought a class action lawsuit on behalf of an estimated 500,000 people who marched in the 2016 Toronto Pride Parade. According to these men, who were the representative plaintiffs in their proposed class action, the defendants handed out pamphlets at the Pride Parade. These pamphlets allegedly contained hate speech and homophobic messaging, and the plaintiffs alleged that they caused harm to the LGBTQ2SI community as a whole. They sued the defendant for damages relating to defamation, intentional infliction of mental distress, and civil conspiracy to injure. The court held that the plaintiff's claim could not continue as a class action. In doing so, the court found that a community could not, as a whole, be a target of defamation, intentional infliction of mental distress, or civil conspiracy to injure. The court found that all of these causes of actions were designed to respond to individuals who suffer their own personal injuries. After denying certification, the court held that the action could continue as an opt-in joinder action for individual members of the LGBTQ2SI community against the defendants. Similarly to Carcillo, this alteration was deemed necessary in order to properly adjudicate the specific claims of individuals harmed by the defendants. The resulting action was an effective middle ground between the effectiveness and the efficiency of a class action on the one hand, and the ability to determine the level of harm done to each individual that a non-class action lawsuit, on the other hand, provides for. Another case discussed by the court was Jonas and Barker. This claim was brought by a group of patients from the infamous Oak Ridge Division of the Penetanguishene Mental Health Center. These plaintiffs suffered horrific treatment at the hands of two psychiatrists at the institution after being involuntarily admitted into the facility. The plaintiffs were subjected to human experimentation through three separate programs administered at the facility between 1966 and 1983. These programs were described by the plaintiffs as mind-altering experiments which incorporated psychological abuse and torture. When the two representative plaintiffs moved for their action to be certified, it was dismissed by the court. The judge found that while there were common issues between the defendants, the plaintiffs had not demonstrated that a class action would, in fact, be the appropriate way to hear the claim. Instead, the claim continued as an opt-in joinder action, similar to Carcillo and Hudspeth, where a group of 28 plaintiffs pursued individual claims under one action. In this case, joinder was used to assist these patients in pursuing compensation for harms done to them, and the court argued that it would have been more difficult for them to pursue on an individual basis. Despite praise from the judge in Carcillo of the case, Jonas and Barker highlights a significant issue with mass tort actions, and this is that they take an incredibly long time to litigate. Even though the plaintiffs in this case launched their claim in 2000, the trial did not occur until 2020, as the relevant period for the claim spanned from the mid-60s to the mid-80s. Each plaintiff had to wait 30 to 60 years to be compensated for the harm they had suffered while admitted at Oak Ridge. Several of the plaintiffs in the action died before or during the trial, with their claims having to be continued by their estate representatives. It is difficult to conclude that access to justice occurred as a result of the change in proceedings, as several of the plaintiffs never had the chance to obtain justice while they were still alive. And this is a particularly concerning result, as there was a relatively low number of plaintiffs under one action in this previous case. So, what does this all mean for the actions in Carcillo? Well, as ordered by the court, the allegations of abuse will proceed as 60 separate actions with an unknown number of plaintiffs coming from nearly 50 years of junior hockey seasons. Every action could theoretically have hundreds of plaintiffs, and similarly to Jonas and Barker, each individual claim would involve complicated and individualized allegations of abuse. While the court in Carcillo cites mass tort actions as being the ideal path to justice, Jonas and Barker shows us that this may not always be the case. The joinder actions created by the court in Carcillo have the potential to be incredibly long proceedings, and the players from the earlier claim period may not even live to testify at their own trial. Despite mass torts purporting to provide greater access to justice, they can be slower proceedings, and some people may consider that to be less preferable in the circumstances. Both class actions and mass torts are aimed at providing individuals with the ability to seek compensation for injuries, which would be difficult to pursue on their own. The court may find that a class action is preferable where the legal issues, injuries, and evidence in a case are similar enough that they can be addressed collectively. Additionally, class actions will be preferable where the court would benefit from consolidating near identical claims to avoid unnecessary duplication. Class actions can lower barriers for plaintiffs who have suffered harm but would not otherwise be able to pursue a claim for compensation. However, as stated by the court in Carcillo and the cases referenced within it, class actions may not always be the right fit either. The court may find that opt-in joinder actions are more appropriate where the particular circumstances of each claimant in a proceeding differ significantly. This kind of proceeding allows for individualized justice, ensuring that each claimant's case is considered. In Carcillo, the court ultimately found that shifting from a class action to an opt-in joinder action was the best way to ensure that the plaintiffs could receive access to justice without overburdening the court system with needlessly complicated proceedings. While the court may have good reason to favor mass tort proceedings in this case, it will be interesting to see how this impacts the choice of players to participate in the proceedings going forward. With a class action lawsuit, players could tell their stories as part of a much larger group. By allowing the representative plaintiffs to drive the player's claim forward, this could alleviate the individual burden on each player that comes with lengthy and emotional legal proceedings. As the plaintiff in Carcillo argued, their greatest barrier was the immense pressure among former players to not speak out about the abuse. With a class action lawsuit, the plaintiffs argued that this culture of silence could be overcome, as they would have the required anonymity and security in numbers to seek justice. However, by altering the proceedings, players are now having to opt in to actions where they could be made to spearhead their own individual claim. By doing so, each player may be opting in to an environment where they would be repeatedly made to recall the horrible abuse they had suffered in the junior hockey leagues. Due to the more involved nature of opt-in joinder actions, the players could spend significant time, money, and emotional effort in advancing their claim. Faced with these possibilities, players may be less willing or entirely unwilling to participate in the proceedings at all. Even if the 60 different legal proceedings do attract high participation among affected players, it is questionable whether the opt-in actions do provide the best pathway for access to justice. Jonas and Barker show us that the plaintiffs in these actions can wait decades before they receive compensation for the harm done to them. Due to the widespread nature of the alleged abuse in Carcillo and the varied and unique individual experiences of this abuse, the 60 new actions created by the court could take decades to resolve. If this is the case, the plaintiffs could rightfully say that the court was wrong in asserting that they would have access to justice, as justice delayed is justice denied. Before I end the show, I would like to say that the views expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of the producers, host, or the Queen's University Faculty of Law. This podcast does not contain any legal advice. Pro Bono Students Canada is a student organization. This podcast was prepared with the assistance of PBSC, Queen's Law Student Volunteers. PBSC students are not lawyers, and they are not authorized to provide legal advice. The podcast contains general discussion of certain legal and related issues only. If you require legal advice, please consult with a lawyer. Today's show was produced by Bobby Alvarez. I'm your host, Bobby. If you like this discussion, you can find more on the Queen's Pro Bono Radio website. Thank you for listening.